Well, as we also follow the story of the JonBenet Ramsey murder case, even though it's 10 years old, the former school teacher has now admitted to killing the six-year-old beauty queen, JonBenet Ramsey, child beauty queen as well. He will face charges of murder, kidnapping, child sexual assault, and he is a 41-year-old. His name is John Mark Carr. The story is developing in the wee hours in Thailand. He says that the murder was an accident. The abuse was not. He claims that he was in love with the child. And there is a picture of this individual, and it is indeed a very sick human being. We'll be back in a moment. We'll take your phone calls. Tom Horn is our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Maybe one day, Tom, we'll be able to genetically alter these sick individuals who commit some of these heinous crimes, huh?
Well, they probably make the case for it, don't they?
Yeah, they really do. Let's go to the phones. We've got a whole slate for you. This hour will go by very quickly. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Marnie from Boston.
Hi, Marnie. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, this is for Tom. Tom, I was trying to think of how long it was. Possibly 10, maybe 12 years ago. I was waiting for a friend to arrive. I was in a hotel in Boston, and there was a group of people that came in, and they sat behind me. And they were attending a convention at a nearby university. They were abductees, and they came from all around the United States. They had been in a study. They had been surveyed, and I introduced myself. I had something happen to me, and I disappeared in front of my dad for like 20 minutes on a beach. And I won't talk about that, but I will. I explained the whole incident to them, and they listened very intently. And they said, "Did you?" Was anything numb after you came to? And I said, one of my legs was numb. And they said, did you have that x-ray to see if there was any capsule, any alloy in it that was foreign? And one girl took out from her pocket a little tiny vial of a very active alloy. And when I picked it up, it started to move, and they started to laugh, and they said, "Oh, see, look at her," but nobody explained it to me. But what I learned from them, Tom, was that they were the third, maybe fourth generation, maybe even I think there was one five generations that had been abducted, that had been visited by extraterrestrials. And it was in a light. One told me that when she was very young, she saw a light dancing off her wall, and it came very, very large around her bed, and she just felt totally sort of paralyzed. There was nothing moving. She wasn't afraid because she couldn't see anything. But when she became more conscious again, she knew she had gone somewhere. And she went to a mother, and she told her about this dream she had. And the mother got very upset, went to the husband. The husband sat down, and he says, you should tell her. And she then told this girl who was right opposite me, who was then a child, what had happened to her. And what had happened to her mother. And I listened intently because I was trying to learn, you know, various things. And the placement of these vials, some had it had the vials behind the kneecap. There were some that told me they had a very, very, very almost microscopic, what looked like a computer or some sort of tracking thing that was behind their ears, embedded in their bone. Some had it near the, not near the brainstem, but in that area. Some had it in a joint in their arm. And so I asked them, are you still scared? I mean, are some of you used to it? I mean, can you remember a probing? You know, I was all full of questions. And one person told me that she had tried to get away from it. They actually can feel them coming, that they can actually anticipate a visit. That's what they call it. And one girl tried to run from that visit. And she said, I wanted to tell you, Monty, that no matter where I hid, they found me. So, George, you may be right about a vortex. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel in my heart of hearts that those that were behind the ear that was embedded in the bone, which you can't get out, I just felt that they were tracking devices. I asked them if they remembered being on a table. You know, I'm looking at the X-Files in my mind as I'm talking to them. Do you remember anything? They did. They actually could remember a conversation they had with these people. And they introduced, some of them introduced themselves as scientists. And in my disappearance, I was on a beach in front of my dad. It was in 1975. I knew something was behind me. I turned, I grabbed a piece of driftwood, and I stood there for a stance. You know, I don't know what it is, but I'm going to hit the hell out of it if it hurts me, you know, if it tries to hurt me. And that was all I could remember. And when I came more conscious into where I was still in that position, but I knew I had lost time. And
so you don't remember where you went, Marty?
I don't remember. I don't remember at all. Oh. And my dad was like maybe 100 feet away, and he said, where the hell have you been? We were so worried. You disappeared. And I said, I have been standing right here. And my dad said, no, you weren't. We went up and down that beach. We did not see you. So when I told them that, this guy who was kind of odd to begin with, it was winter, you know, everybody had their coats and everything on. He just seemed to be overly dressed warmly. He had his gloves on. A woman next to me said, he has sensitive eyes. Don't worry about it. He's not trying to be rude. He trusts you. He just doesn't see that well. But he had tinted frames on, and his voice was kind of odd. And he looked at me, and this is exactly what he said. I kid you not. He looked at me, and he said, they didn't tamper with you. They didn't test you. He says, you're not like us. Your DNA is different.
Interesting.
Isn't that
almost
something?
Genetically altered? Marty, thanks. That's an incredible story, Tom.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us, Marty. You know, part of the writing of the Aramon Gate, of course, was therapeutic. You know, I understand that now, the need to understand, reconcile events that are real, but that fit, George, so far outside of our understanding of the cosmos and the reality, you know, the matrix.
Mm-hmm.
That we live in each day. You know, some of the things I've not said. My niece, when she came back from that event, and this is provable through police records. After that picture that was snapped, that the Coast to Coast people looked at and analyzed, it wasn't 3 or 4 days later. Her husband came home, found her standing in the She has a sliding door on the back of her house. Found her standing in the doorway, blood running down all over her face. And she had this huge gash on her head. And he came running up to her. He didn't, you know, he just freaked out about it. He didn't know what he was, what was going on. You know, was she hurt by somebody that had broken into the house? What had happened? And she was mumbling to him, "Do you see that over there?" And she was pointing. And he turned around, and later on he described what he thought he saw as a man in a zoot suit that was ducking out of the way. But he thought she had been hurt by somebody that broke into the house. So he calls 911. She goes to the hospital. She's at the hospital. My brother, who is an Assembly of God pastor, came by and prayed with her. And she told me later, she said after he left, maybe an hour later, there were these two people, once again, George, explain this to me, once again in military clothing. And they walk into the room, and this woman, who looks like she's some kind of an officer, looks at my niece and says, "It's not what you are now, but it's what they are making you." And then they walk out of the room.
That is weird.
And it just, you know, that, of course, that stuck with her, and she wanted me to know about that. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the story that Marnie's telling now. And then these implants that she's talking about. You know, Dr. Lear, I'm having my niece, she's actually already drawn some of those implants for me. And I'm sending that to Lear. Maybe that'll
show. He's the one, Tom. He, as you well know, he's the one. Do you know where the blood came from in the battering appearance?
She had a huge gash on her head. And by the way, her she showed me her. You know, they did a test of her blood, and she showed me the report from the hospital. Her blood had come back at over 90% toxic. It was just a very strange. Very strange, unexplainable.
Skeptic will say she was sleepwalking and smashed into something.
Well, maybe she was sleepwalking, smashed into something. But the sleepwalking and the smashing into something that she did has been being done by tens of thousands of other people for as far back as history has been recorded.
That's true. First time caller line, you're on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the program. Hi. You're going to punch that up for me, Stephen.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Sorry.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from this Tony in Arkansas.
Hi, Tony.
And just an honor to speak with both of you. I had a quick question and a comment, and I can listen to the answer off the air. I was hoping Tom might, you've done a lot of breakdown of the Illuminati, George, and I was hoping Tom might give his breakdown of the president's inaugural speeches, 1 and 2, President Bush, in which he mentioned the angel in the whirlwind and fire in the minds of men. And I'd love to hear that breakdown. And then just a quick comment. Tomorrow, or August 17th, is Portinalia, following the Illuminati. And they tend to follow occult days. A lot of events tend to happen. And even George had admitted that 9/11 seems to have at least the hand of the Illuminati behind it. And both the 9/11 and 7/7, there were drills being run that day that the actual event went live. And tomorrow's Portinalia, which is the opening by fire of ports or doorways that the Romans used to celebrate. It's an occult holiday. And those would be stargates, doorways, that type of thing. And there's a drill, the Honolulu Star Bulletin's reporting, there's going to be a drill of a ship coming into Honolulu Harbor in which terrorists detonate a nuclear dirty bomb, killing 10,000 to 20,000. Now, it's supposed to be a drill, but we ought to be warned that, you know, these things can go live. And I just thought the Coast audience ought to be aware of that, and perhaps he could talk about the comments by the president and the opening of doorways, that these people are occultists and Luciferians, and they believe in this sacrifice and using the fire to open of human life to open these doorways and stargates. And I appreciate what you all do. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate you being part of the program. There's no question. It's always a little nervy when we do some kind of test and then some event actually occurs, Tom.
Well, yeah, and more than one person now is pointing out the coincidences, how sometimes the timing of what we say about particular events, you know, may follow, as Tony is talking about, may follow or precede esoteric moments in time. I don't know, you know, I don't know, especially with us having maybe 30 minutes into this program, I don't know if I want to share too much of my personal thoughts about what I thought about some of the president's inaugural speeches. You know, his first inaugural speech, he twice referred to the angel in the whirlwind that directs the storm. That's a line, of course, from Joseph Addison's 1705 poem, The Campaign, that was quoted in a letter from John Page, who actually wrote to Thomas Jefferson, who at that time was part of the, you know, was part of an Illuminist organization. Some people say that after that he came out of it, but it was after the Declaration of Independence, in any case, was signed, and he, Joseph Addison, said to Thomas, he said, "Do you not think that an angel rides in the whirlwind and directs the storm?" Then, in Bush's second inaugural, he spoke of having lit a fire in the minds of men, which is a line taken from Dostoevsky's novel, The Possessed. And I had actually pointed to both of those inaugural references as being curious because of the elements of wind and fire, key elements of the ancient forms of dualism connected to Iran and Iraq and Zoroastrianism, and also the more modern name for the Illuminati, Moriah Conquering Wind. And, you know, I've done entire shows where we've talked for hours on connecting the dots here, but the bottom line is that I think ultimately it brings us to, well, it brings us to Metatron, who in the Kabbalah is the angel in the whirlwind, which is the same angel of Bush's speech. And then, of course, back to the book of Enoch. Isn't that where I always go?
You always deliver.
Who's the knower and the revealer of secrets and the Illuminati, the Moriah conquering wind, also known as the brother of Ophon, which in Hebrew is the wheel, as in the wheel in the middle of the wheel, according to ancient sages, the literal chariot of God connected to ufology and official disclosure. And more importantly, that Metatron, who's worshipped by the Illuminati, is the keeper and giver of secrets, who has a female equivalent, which is, guess who, Shekinah, the president's own title for our invasion of Babylon. And, you know, so maybe Tony, I think he said he was from Texas, I forget, maybe he's right. Maybe there's, you know, maybe there's something going on that surpasses what we've talked about so far. And maybe tonight, George, that's all I want to say about that.
Okay, Tom, and stay with us. We're going to be back. We'll take final phone calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And that link that Tom wanted us to get up there on Coast to Coast, it is there for you. We'll be back. And when we come right back, Tom Horn and your final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie along with Tom Horn. Tom, so tell me about this this latest book that's coming out, the new Nephilim book. When does it hit the stands?
Well, the first version of it is going to be put out as an ebook version only. It will be available at Raiders News Update. It's with the editor right now, and I'm about halfway through the book. You know, the editor takes it, and then they send me back questions, as you're probably familiar. And I'm working through that editing process, but I'm assuming maybe within about 90 days it'll be available at Raiders News Update. And then probably sometime after Christmas, the first of next year, in print.
Okay.
And the name of the book is Nephilim Stargates, The Return of the Watchers. But what this book is more of a study. It's not fiction. It's more of a study of the ancient history, the testimony of those who went before us about this event we've been talking about tonight, as well as how I think some of this is interpreted in the teachings of their mythology.
To the phones we go. Let us go to our international line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Good morning from Guadalajara, Mexico. This is Steven.
Go ahead,
Steven. I want to tell you it's the first time I've gotten through, but I love your show, and Guadalajara has a little-known secret of the most beautiful women in the world. My question is for Tom this evening. I have followed a lot of the UFO reports, and especially in Mexico, we've had, oh, man, just like they're coming from everywhere. And, Tom, I'm sure you're aware of a scripture in the Bible that talks about the end times and how a great deception will fall upon the earth. I believe I have a theory that the UFOs aren't really aliens from other planets, but I'd like your comment on possibly them being merely demonic manifestations in the last days in order to justify the disappearance of all of the Christians that are raptured away. And I'll listen off the line to your response. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you out there in Mexico. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, Stephen, thank you for your question. It's interesting that ufologists of different creed disagree on the meaning of particular ET phenomenon, but assert that the language that defines UFOs and extraterrestrial intelligence is, as I said earlier, angelological and demonological in terms, including, by the way, promises by the Creator to return through heaven's gates at the end of time. Some people hold, therefore, that religious and non-religious ufologists are actually saying the same thing, but from different points of view. Most religions have at least one apocalyptic myth describing the end of the world accompanied by a savior who appears in the sky at the last minute to rescue the chosen from annihilation or wrath. Sumerians, Mayans, Assyrians, Egyptians, Greeks held similar beliefs. In fact, Hopi Indians talk about a time of great destruction when the land's going to be preserved, when a blue star, far off and invisible, makes its appearance. And so first of all, there is this general belief about a savior who is going to appear in the clouds at the end of the time. There's a great deal of talk right now about the Mayan belief and the 2012 date and the end of the great Mayan calendar and the countdown of the Aztec calendar, and the skies are going to open, and Quetzalcoatl is going to descend on a rope ladder, or in some interpretations, descend in a flying disc, by the way. Isn't that interesting?
It sure is.
So this idea is out there. Now, where did the idea come from? In the second book that I wrote, which was called The Gods Who Walk Among Us, I put forth this hypothesis, which was endorsed by seven PhDs in ancient history, who liked the idea. And the hypothesis was that there was an original revelation that came from God to man, and that after the disruption in the book of Genesis, the fall of mankind, man was detached essentially from the mind of God, and then this original revelation was therefore also detached from the mind of God. Man no longer had automatic access to understanding the knowledge of God, everything from cosmology to science, to whatever, weather patterns, to whatever. Man was detached from the mind of God. So he had this original revelation that might even include information pertaining to the redemption of mankind. And he begins now through word of mouth to pass along to following generations the original revelation of God. The problem is, over a period of time, the revelation becomes splintered. It becomes fractured because, you remember that, George, you remember that experiment you did when you was a kid in school and somebody whispers into your ear, don't think about a pink elephant or something like that, and you're supposed to whisper the same thing in the next person's ear, and they do it. And by the time you get 20 people through the class, it's changed. And that's what happens when we repeat oral history, when we tell the story as we remember it and we give it to the next person, and they may add to it or distract from it, or they lose some of the detail. And over a long period of time, oral history has a way of becoming mythologized, meaning that people change the names of the gods, and they change the names of the creators, and they change the names of the events, so that over a long period of time, the history becomes plagiarized by our own specific ideas. Now, Stephen wanted to know, if there's a rapture and a great deal of people come up missing from the earth all of a sudden, could that be used to explain, could that be a great deception? Could aliens or whatever claim to have taken those persons, into a different dimension or whatever, and then present their leader as the Messiah? I think that's what Stephen was asking me. And their leader under that scenario would be the Antichrist, Daniel talking about the last days global leader who would not honor the God of his fathers or mothers, but that he would worship a different God, an alien God, Beelzebub, the powers of the air. And am I following that right, you think, George?
I think you're right on the button. And let's take a few more calls before we call it a night, Tom. Let's go to who's been on hold so long? West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there. This is Keith from Sedona, Arizona.
Hey, Keith.
And hi to Tom and George. And my comment is, I'm going to give you a quick comment and then a quick question. I think we're in the same war that blew the asteroid belt into pieces, and I've seen the Greys face-to-face in their hive mind. And I think the aliens have been manipulating us genetically for millennia. My question to you is, how can you be so right on, and this is to Tom, of course, so right on and be hanging out with John Ashcroft? What's up with that?
Well, like I said, 16th century, the art of war. Keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Hey, Keith, Sedona isn't that kind of, by the way, in my book, The Ahriman Gate, I created a fictional situation in which a craft is recovered from Sedona, Arizona.
How about that?
You like that?
I love it. Let's go east of the Rockies. Your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good evening, gentlemen. This
yes,
is Eric
sir.
From Cleveland. I just wanted to comment. You mentioned, I believe, the Book of Enki at the beginning of the show, and pretty much everything that he said is justified in that book. And I think that we have to realize as a people what we're up against here, because a lot of people, and this, I'm the only one spouting off this theory that I know of, one of the things that the fallen angels taught to men is sorcery, along with mathematics and, of course, the secrets of the stars and things like that. And we have, I think, an unbroken chain, a small group of people who have had that knowledge all along. I think there's absolutely no question that we were visited by aliens. I've been listening to Coast to Coast and reading just about every author that comes up here since they started broadcasting in Cleveland. So that's, about 14, 15, maybe 16 years. And I have no doubt that there's a lot of military involvement. And I think that one of the things that you were talking about, you have a new book, Mr. Horn, coming out about the Nephilim. Well, the Nephilim being a crossing of human and these extraterrestrials, there's nothing saying that these extraterrestrials are anything like us. And it's kind of silly for us to assume that they, if they've developed thousands of years more advanced than us, that that is mind, spirit, and body. And these Nephilim, once killed, their spirits are not like ours. If we have ghosts running around, how much more powerful are their ghosts? And I don't. It's just a theory that this is probably where our demons come from, and that we've been manipulated all along. But with so many things that we have come up with, and remember, almost all of our colleges have some kind of federal funding coming in, MIT, whatever the cutting-edge technology, this is going to private sources first. And if there is going to be some manipulation of mankind's genetics in the future, this is going to be held strictly to the rich and if you want to call them the Illuminati, that's probably just as good as anything else. But I think that these are the people that are holding all of these technologies.
I would believe that, Tom. I agree with that.
Also, are you familiar with Carlos Castaneda's work with the teachings of Don Juan?
Well, certainly familiar with the names, uh-huh.
Okay, well, Don Juan was a sorcerer from Mexico. He was actually a Yaqui Indian.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about what he calls allies, which are something of a spirit that is in a different dimension. And Carlos Castaneda was being taught to perceive these other dimensions that are pretty much overlapped on top of ours. So these things could very well be walking right next to us, and unless you can actually see these things as he describes it, because most of us just look at things. We don't see them for what they really are, because we've been taught not to. And remember, all of our history, all of our sciences, is all post-Dark Ages. This is rewritten by the Catholic Church and what we've come up with since. But there are people who still have the knowledge of what happened prior to that.
That's a good point. Thanks, Eric. Tom, do you want to react to some of that?
Well, Eric, I sure wish that this is the second time George Norrie and I were going to talk about psychotronic warfare and never got there.
But, that's part three, Tom.
And by the way, George, you're such a gentleman, a scholar. You're a great host. And I hope someday we do get to psychotronic warfare, because I promise to take you where no man has gone before.
All right. That's a deal.
In an area that will blow your mind. But Eric is right. There could be agenteurs even now that appear to be human, but who see and even interact with invisible forces. And when you're talking, you know, I'm following some of his line of thought so that I can respond to his comments. When you're talking about the Nephilim, it's such a deeper commentary than most people ever get to. When it begins dealing with the children who were born of the Watchers, who seem to have been the reincarnation of dead Nephilim, and it takes us not just to the Rephaim, but it takes us to some of the ancient texts, the Rosh Shamra, which describe the Rephaim as both human and divine beings. And it actually gives us the details of what happened with those beings who came down and after the flood, when they came back, and how it happened. And it goes to the root of why I have an interest in transgenic research and what I think will happen, which meets with the prophecies of the Bible, but with the prophecies of some other texts as well.
All right, let's go to our wild card line. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Ray in Texas. How are y'all?
Good, Ray.
Here I am at the end of the show with about 10 million ideas since you guys just brought them up.
Really?
I called originally.
Great timing.
I called originally to talk about the probability that because of the multiple dimensions and M theory, we are probably not being bred with aliens, because aliens are probably just cross-dimensional beings like we are. That makes more sense to me than people living on other planets, because as we know, that's all an illusion anyway. Are you still there?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, good. And then you brought up the demons by Dostoevsky, which was, you know, mistranslated as the possessed. And in that, the ideas are all, the ideas of the demons, not the people. And as the ideas go from one person to another, they are corrupted. And there's fire in there when the entire town is burned down to hide murders. So once again, it goes back to your fire metaphor. I don't even know where to start now. I mean, like I say, you guys brought up so much. As far as ships coming to visit us, I can't think of a better docking place than a pyramid for a ship to land, can you?
I've always thought that,
you know,
in some form or fashion.
Yeah, it's just perfect. It's just perfect. It's so late. We're out of time. I'll call another time. I've really enjoyed the conversation tonight.
Thanks,
when I've heard
Ray.
Of it. I suffer from peripheral neuropathy, and I'm up most nights.
All right. Appreciate you being part of the program. Well, we've only got about a minute left, so we're going to slowly ease our way out of this. Tom, definitely a need for part three, don't you think?
Oh, I'd love to do it, George. Yeah.
The link you wanted, it's already up there on coasttocoastam.com. People are beginning to listen to the audio of the gargoyle sound.
Good.
And it's scaring them and shocking them and everything else.
Yes, and I would like to invite those people out there who are experts in terms of analyzing audio recordings to stick that thing in their lab and let me know what they think, if it's just a fluke, if it was just some kind of a, you know, I remember one time I was giving a speech at a conference, and all of a sudden, George, a voice appeared right in front of my face. It was the strangest thing, and it looked like it felt like it moved across the auditorium, like I could walk along and look at it as it was talking. And it turned out later on that some trucker had drove past the building with a CB and was talking on his CB, and it was being picked up with the PA system.
Those things happen. Hey, Tom, thank you. Appreciate you being on the program.
Thank you, George. I look forward to part three.
Absolutely. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Gina Salvati, Wayne Roberts, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.